KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This is 89.9 KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. The Oscars are behind us. Time to move on to some new movies. And here to help us do that are William Bibbiani and Katie Walsh. Bibbs is film critic and co-host of the Critically Acclaimed Network. And Katie Walsh reviews films for the Tribune News Service and the Los Angeles Times. Welcome back to both of you.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Thank you.
Ahoy, ahoy. Okay, first up, the serious film today. A true story about a London stockbroker who saved hundreds of Jewish children from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia during World War II. This is called One Life, and it stars Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Nikki, you must know we cannot save them all. You have to forgive yourself that.
I started, sir. I have to finish it.
Okay, Bibbs, this is based on a true story about a man named another Sir Nicky Winton. And most people have probably never heard of him, but this movie sounds a little bit like Schindler's List. Tell us more about the plot.
So Nicholas Winton, as you mentioned, he was a stockbroker in London in the late 1930s. And when he found out about the German occupation of Czechoslovakia and how many children were at severe risk of being, killed. He decided he had to do something about it. It's a hell of a story. And Anthony Hopkins plays the older Nicholas Winton. Johnny Flynn plays him as a younger man. Helena Bonham Carter plays his mother. And this is the kind of movie that you would want to show if you wanted people to know about this part of history. It is not, unfortunately, in itself, a particularly dazzling or suspenseful, captivating movie. It's perfectly fine. It's a nice film if you want to get this history lesson. And if you know the story of Nicholas Winton, and you might, you know that it has a great ending. Like, the actual conclusion of the movie, the climax, is very memorable. But everything leading up to it is basically, here's what happened.
All right, Katie, this is directed by James Hawes, and he has directed television, most notably the Black Mirror series and the Slow Horses series in Britain. This is his first feature film. And what did you think of his performance?
Yeah, I think this is actually like a very quietly moving film. I agree with Bibbs that in the first half, it feels very sort of standard issue. Like, we've seen this story before. Like, the iconography is very familiar. The story beats. There's not a lot of explaining why the younger Nicholas Winton was so compelled to go. There's not really like any sort of psychological motivation beyond the fact that he just felt like this was something that he had to do out of, you know, the values of decency and kindness that he was raised with. But I think what's really compelling about this story is sort of the second half, which is the Sir Anthony Hopkins half, where he, you know, he's found this scrapbook of his time working in Czechoslovakia with photographs of the children. And he's sort of like, well, I don't know if this was a good thing I did or not. You know, I guess it matters or it doesn't. And I think the more interesting part of the story is how people came to recognize him and the importance of the work that he did, and that saving 600 children would actually turn into, you know, saving a generation of people and the amount of lives that he has affected. So it was one of those movies that really crept up on me in a very subtle and like quietly effective way. It's not trying to be too a sensationalist about this type of material, which I kind of appreciated from James Hawes.
Yeah. Okay. One Life in theaters in wide release beginning today. Now begins the animal-themed portion of our film review segment. Next up, another one based on a true story, an adventure film called Arthur the King, starring Mark Wahlberg as part of a racing team that accidentally adopts a stray dog named Arthur along the race.
You want to start to embrace the buckets of pain?
I need a bigger bucket.
Team Broad Rail has traveled over 200 miles. And they found a companion.
Daddy has a dog?
What have you done?
I think you found your new partner in suffering, Michael.
Yeah, he's the king.
I think we should call him Arthur.
Arthur the King.
Okay, Katie, you saw this one, and this is a true story, I guess, or it's based on a true story about a dog who manages to somehow follow this racing team on a 400-plus mile race through the wilderness. In real life, it was Ecuador. In the movie, it's the Dominican Republic. What did you think?
It's a dog movie. You'd have to be a complete, you know, jerk to not, you know, shed a tear because, you know, we don't deserve dogs. Dogs are just perfect creatures. But yeah, this is kind of like a sort of odd human interest sports quirky story that has become this sort of like media sensation. And it also is a film about a very niche sport I had never heard of, which was adventure racing, where you hike and mountain bike and trek and run and kayak like over the course of 5 days, and the dog follows them and becomes like their mascot and their motivator, and even has a couple Lassie moments where he's barking at the team like, don't fall in that ravine kind of situation. And this, I just want to say, is very much a Mark Wahlberg movie. He's a deeply devout Catholic who wakes up at like 3 a.m. to work out. So this movie could not be more up his alley, I think. And he's also really into this idea of like salvation through suffering, which is a very Catholic idea. And in the trailer clip you played, he sort of says like, embrace the pain, the buckets of pain. And he keeps talking about suffering and pain and how, you know, through physical degradation, this is kind of how you achieve transcendence. And so yeah, it's a very much an adventure dog movie, many of which we have seen before since the advent of cinema. And it is very much a Mark Wahlberg movie in that it is about the themes that he loves to embrace.
Arthur the King in wide release beginning today. Moving on, we have a French thriller. It's called The Animal Kingdom, and it's a story of a father and son trying to survive in a world where a virus, sound familiar, is causing humans to mutate.
Non mais les gens ont peur, qu'est-ce que tu veux? Donc ça sert à rien de les enfermer. On va apprendre à vivre ensemble.
N'aie pas peur. C'est ta mère, Emile.
Okay, so one character is saying there, people are afraid, it's pointless, locking them up, learn to live together. Another says, don't be afraid, she's your mother. I guess the mom, Bibbs, has transformed into something otherworldly, unhuman.
Actually quite worldly, but not human. This movie takes place in a world just like your own, except in the relatively recent past. People, and they're not sure if it's a virus or exactly what causes it, but people have started randomly mutating into half human, half animal creatures. It could be any animal. We see wolves, chameleons, hawks, snakes. The visual effects are really quite lovely and astounding. This movie, we just had the Academy Awards here in America. Well, they just had the Academy Awards in France too. And while Anatomy of a Fall won Best Picture, was kind of the Oppenheimer of the evening, the Animal Kingdom was kind of like the poor things. It really took home a lot of the technical awards. And it's easy to see why. It's realization of this kind of strange, you know, half power fantasy, half cautionary tale about how we treat people who are different in the environment would be realized. It's really quite lovely to look at. Story-wise, it's a story of a man whose wife has turned into one of these animal creatures, and his son starts transforming into one as well, and he doesn't tell his father for a long time, and he starts to realize that, you know, these creatures might not be monstrous, maybe there's actually something beautiful about them. I think a lot of Americans would expect a story like this to really kick into high gear and get into serious action territory, and while there are some definitely very thrilling and unusual sequences of action and peril, this is a much more thoughtful take on this kind of fantasy genre. And I really got swept up in it. I think this is really quite remarkable. I think as a sort of a metaphor, as an allegory, it's a little vague to the point of maybe not being as useful as it could be in a real world application. But in terms of just dunking us into this world of a very distinct version of, you know, fantasy and monsters, it's quite remarkable, and I enjoyed it a lot, and I'd recommend it.
Okay. Katie, seems like it is an apt metaphor for COVID and other things. What did you think?
I loved this film. I agree with Bibbs. I was very captivated by it. The world building is really amazing. And also the visual effects are just stunning. I actually think the metaphor is like very obvious and profound. I sort of looked at it as a metaphor for anybody that we consider other and sort of try to persecute and make force them to either live in a contained world. There's this sort of threat of like a big concrete like facility where they're going to put all the quote unquote critters, as they keep calling them, and what it means to, you know, try to control people's bodies who are, you know, uncontrollable. Like they can't control whether or not they turn into the creatures. So is it better to, you know, violently force them to be hidden from view, or to just let them live in this verdant, peaceful world that they kind of established for themselves? And you know, I think it's, you know, I was looking at it very much as like a queer metaphor, like a trans metaphor. I thought it was, you know, but I think it's open enough that anybody can kind of use this film to represent what they, you know, what they want to represent. I loved this. I love that it's sort of a French domestic drama rather than a thriller or action film. And Romain Duris plays the father. He is so good. And the son is played by a kid named Paul Kircher. He is absolutely terrific as well. Great performance. The score is beautiful. It also won a César Award, which is the French Oscars. And yeah, I think this film is great.
The Animal Kingdom in limited release beginning today, and you can see it at the Alamo Draft House in downtown LA. Finally, another animal flick, a coming-of-age film called Little Wing. It stars The Florida Project's Brooklyn Prince and Succession's Brian Cox. Yes, Logan Roy himself. It's about a 13-year-old whose family crisis pulls her into the world of pigeon racing.
We're getting a divorce.
I owe $100,000 on the house.
If I had that money, I'd buy this house and kick everyone out.
Have you ever heard of racing pigeons?
There's this dude. One of his birds is valued at $120,000.
Wait, where does this pigeon dude live?
Here, in Portland. Boom.
All right, Katie, this is loosely based on a New Yorker article by Susan Orlean. Tell us more about what happens to Brooklyn Prince's character, Caitlin, and what you thought of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever wanted to see Brian Cox threaten Brooklyn Prince over a missing pigeon, this is the movie for you.
I did want that. I didn't know I wanted that, but I do now.
If you remember Brooklyn Prince, she was so adorable and sweet and heartbreaking in The Florida Project, which came out in 2017. She's still a really, really terrific actress. I liked this film a lot. I kind of thought, you know, going in, I'm like, oh, it's going to be kind of like a treacly, like heartwarming tale about a girl and this older figure. It's actually quite a bit edgier than I expected. The director is Dean Israelite, and he really brings like a very sort of like thriller aspect to this. What could have been quite, you know, cheesy is actually pretty interesting, you know, thanks to the actors who are terrific. And then also the director who really brings an interesting, darker edge to the film. One of the things I love about this movie is the soundtrack is so good. She's obsessed with Kathleen Hanna. So there's all these Riot Girl songs on Bikini Kill, La Tigre songs on the soundtrack, and just made it, gave it a flavor of being something a little bit more interesting. So I did enjoy this one.
Bibbs?
Yeah, I'm with Katie all the way. I love this movie. I feel like this movie kind of got snuck out there. It didn't get a big push. It's on Paramount Plus exclusive. And I see people talking about like, hey, where are all the good coming of age stories of our generation? And I'm like, here's one. They barely want you to see it. I love that Dean Israelite took this Susan Orlean story, which it would, if you just, you know, dealt with it directly, just be a story about a kid who got into pigeon racing, and that would have been lovely in its own right. And he was like, what if there were heists? And that's such a great addition. that's such a fun. I got really swept up in it. I thought this was going to be Fly Away Home. It's got spunk. It's got humor. It's got love. It isn't afraid to tackle some actually kind of dark subject material for kids. I laughed. I was moved. I really do think this is one of the better coming of age stories I've seen in years, and I really hope it doesn't get lost in the shuffle.
William Bibbiani is film critic and co-host of the podcasts Canceled Too Soon and critically acclaimed. Katie Walsh reviews films for the Tribune News Service and the Los Angeles Times. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Is that your pigeon?
I'm pretty cool.
All right. Thank you both. Take care.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.